Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
This is Rob Crowther with IDTheFuture.com podcast. I'm reporting from on the road this week, where we caught up with Walt Ruloff, who is the executive producer of a brand new film titled Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, and starring Ben Stein. And the movie actually deals directly with the whole debate over intelligent design and Darwinian evolution, looking specifically at the kind of academic freedom angle. And I'm going to have Walt jump in right away and give us a little bit of an overview about the movie. Can you do that for us, Walt?
Yeah, you bet. Well, thanks, Rob. It's great to catch up with you. Great to catch up with you here. Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed is essentially a movie starring Ben Stein, which is, if we tried to bring it down to essentially a plot, it would be best described as a hero's journey. Ben Stein, obviously a great intellect, considered one of the, probably one of those smartest people as far as a Hollywood personality in the United States. Has been on shows like Win Ben Stein's Money and probably best known for Ferris Bueller's Day Off. But essentially what the movie is all about is Ben Stein goes on a journey and is always intrigued and has always been intrigued of this great debate, essentially the great struggle between neo-Darwinism and religion. But what really spurs him on is when he comes in contact with Richard von Sternberg, who used to have a position with the Smithsonian and the NIH, when he eventually published that paper for Dr. Meyer. And we all know what happened there was essentially he was essentially almost evicted from the institution. So Ben Stein stumbles across that and is horrified by the academic suppression and discovers that this is just the tip of the iceberg, and then goes on a journey and goes on a heroic quest to understand exactly what's going on and seeing if he can do, and then ultimately takes on the folks behind the curtain. And I don't want to give away the entire movie, but it's an incredible ride from initially being quite skeptical to then understanding the full scope of it, and ultimately realizing what he and what really this country needs to do.
Well, our listeners are well aware of some of the academic freedom issues that come right up in this debate. They know very well the story of Richard Sternberg and Dr. Meyer's paper about intelligent design and what happened to Dr. Sternberg for just having the temerity to publish a paper by someone else, and he was attacked. Now, you found, in doing this movie for the last couple of years, I suspect a lot more people like him, and got some insight into some of the debate over academic freedom that's going on out there today. Maybe you can share a little bit of that with us to get people's interest piqued for the film.
Yeah, we were really surprised. I mean, I started this project a little over 2 years ago, and I can get into that in a little bit. But we were incredibly surprised at just how entrenched and how widespread the suppression is. Entrenched being the reigning orthodoxy, being neo-Darwinism, and the suppression. Essentially, what's in the news today is everything that you hear. For example, with the Dover trial, the rubber hits the road with the media as it relates to what happens within the schools, what can and cannot be taught in the schools. But we, as filmmakers, we really wanted to bypass all of that and go to where the rubber hits the road, and that's where the science is being done. And that's in the laboratories and the institutions essentially all over the world. And so that's where we went. And that's where things start. And what we found there was massive, massive entrenched suppression. A lot of the people in our film asked to be blacked out with their identities being hidden. And that's what we did. And essentially what you'll see in this film when it comes out is just the level and the extent of what these people have gone through, are going through, and continue to go through as far as trying to be able to do their science, either theoretical or applied, but towing the party line, being good comrades in the state of neo-Darwinism. And so as filmmakers, and as with Ben Stein, we were very surprised at just the depth of the suppression.
So we know about this a little bit, people that follow the issue, and you know about it now, clearly. So what in the world makes a filmmaker want to do a movie about Darwinism and about academic suppression? I mean, how did you come up with this idea, or what made you interested in this whole subject?
Yeah, my background is technology. I've always been a real technology buff, and in my early 20s, I started up a software company in the area of logistics optimization and other things. That company grew to be quite large and actually became the worldwide de facto standard. And the reason why we were able to grow, and grow by sometimes up to 200%+ a year, is we were able to continually to ask questions. We were able to continue to essentially what I like to refer to as trying to find a place where we can build a disruptive technology. As you know, with technology today is that essentially there's an obsolescence rate of 6 months, sometimes quicker, but it's averaging anywhere from 6 months to 3/4 of a year. And technology is continuing to change. And the reason that technology is allowed to change that quickly, or is changing that quickly, is because the developers, the executives, the whole trillion-dollar industry is able to continue to ask and to try to find better ways to do it, and essentially be able to think outside the box. And that's how we grew, and that's how everyone in the industry grows, is to be able to continually to think outside the box and to question everything, always. So I've always been intrigued with this subject. And on the event of being able to sell my company, and to, it gave me some time to look at other areas, I dove into this area. And I was absolutely surprised to find that in this area, in research, in either theoretical or applied, the exact opposite is happening. You were not allowed to ask questions. Now, the bottom line, Rob, is this is one of the most, or probably the most important area within our society, and that's healthcare. And that's research into these key issues. Now, is design going to be able to have these massive breakthroughs? Maybe. But the objective is to be free and to go and to look and to see if there is a rock that hasn't been overturned with an incredible amount of new understanding and foresight, essentially being able to think outside the box to try to tackle these problems in a different way. So when we went in and we analyzed genomics and what's happening specifically in microbiology, we found that the resounding standard for research and development was, no, you can't do that. and coming from a technology background, I was floored. I mean, I was absolutely floored. And the first thing that came to my mind was, I was so inspired that I said, we've got to do something. We've got to expose this. You know, if the design hypothesis is right or wrong, we've got to expose this. And obviously we went on quite a journey and came to some conclusions of our own. But that's really, to answer your question, that's how we got started on this journey.
One of the things that always amazes me is how critics of intelligent design, especially the most staunch Darwinists, often say things like, you know, intelligent design is just a science stopper. And yet what you're saying is it's the exact opposite. The Darwinists, for whatever reason, have imposed an orthodoxy and a system that doesn't allow people to ask questions or pursue research that doesn't fit a certain mold. So that would sound like that's the science stopper to me.
Yeah, the great rebuttal that we've discovered that you obviously already know about, which is everybody talking about ID is the great science stopper. Well, we discovered essentially the exact opposite. And essentially, I can answer the question in two areas, two fundamental areas. First is an ideological position, and the second is a practical. So first, in the ideological front, we need to realize as a society, specifically in the United States, that a vast majority of Americans are religious. I mean, if you break it down, 45 to 50% being what you typically refer to as a creationist, and another 35 to 38% being what you would call a theistic evolutionist or a evolutionary theist that believes that the evolutionary process was somehow guided. So if you take that category, and you're looking at 85%+ of Americans don't buy in to the standard neo-Darwinist position, which is an unguided, purely naturalistic process. So my point on the ideological front is we have to be aware that our future great minds are coming from religious families. And so we cannot immediately ask them, as we are doing now in all of our institutions, is essentially to check their religious belief at the door if they're going to enter in the great halls and the great institutions of biological research. So this is a real, as far as I'm concerned, is a real science stopper. 85% of the public and 85% of our future generation. So that's a first answer. The second is on the practical front. What we found is, as we walked through this process, and as you'll see in the film, is that a lot of the people that we interviewed asked to remain anonymous. And so we filmed them being blacked out, and we changed their voice, and so their identity will not be known. And the great example is we interviewed one of the leading genomic researchers in the country that gets all of his funding from the NIH and the NSF. And the NIH and the NSF allocates per year well over $30 billion a year. And a certain allocation of that goes to the genomic research. But it's in the tens and tens of millions of dollars. And he was blacked out. And essentially what he told us on camera is that, listen, we're all big boys and girls in this sandbox. We know how to play the game. In order for us to receive funding, we have to toe the party line and adhere to a Darwinist orthodoxy in order to get the funding. But the really crazy thing, what he said was, is when we go into our research, what we find is that a growing percentage of our research, specifically in RNA synthesis, is pointing in radical new directions that we can't publish. In other words, if we publish, and this is the genomic researcher speaking, that if we publish the results that point into radical new directions, we will be considered something else. We will not be considered towing the orthodoxy and essentially giving fuel to the so-called creationists. And so we can't publish those specific areas. Well, that is a real practical hindrance. So what they're doing is they're essentially shelving their findings. So the whole process of having a scientific collaborative process, which is the heartblood of this research, specifically on the theoretical side, is being able to understand what's going and happening across multiple scientific research projects. And so if there is a percentage that is being shelved because it doesn't meet certain standards and guidelines, this goes against everything practical that I know of. Specifically coming from my area where, we ask all questions and everything is on the shelf. It's not on the shelf, but is on the table, I should say. Everything is on the table for us to research to see if there's a practical outcome and a new way of dealing with this. So those really are the two answers of this so-called science stopper. Again, I believe it's 180 degrees. It's in the other direction.
That's just amazing that you have scientific research and ideas being put aside for an ideological reason. And there's no way really, how do you quantify what discoveries aren't being made? What research is, you know, otherwise fruitful research is not going on because of this? You can't even quantify that because the scientists can't share and collaborate.
Yeah, we really have no idea. I mean, I asked a few of these researchers if they could quantify the amount of research that they had to so-called shelve. One of our researchers specifically said, well, it's tough to say, but I would quantify that anywhere from 20 to 30%.
That's huge.
So, yeah, and if you need to understand that that's, let's say it's 20%, let's say it's 10%. I mean, actually, let's say it's 5%. So when you're not allowed to collaborate on this new information, that becomes exponential, right? Because that 5% may equal to something from another research lab that is 2% or 10% and so forth. And so the ability to collaborate around these new potential directions of essentially what's happening within the cell is fundamentally important for future research.
Well, that's great. And so the movie Expelled No Intelligence Allowed is shining a light on this. It's exposing some of this.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, when you go to our website or you go to see our marketing, it's quite whimsical and entertaining, which is very important because we want to reach a mass audience. But the subject matter is dead serious.
That's the end of the first part of our interview with Walt Ruloff, executive producer of Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, the new film about Darwin-doubting scientists and how their work is being suppressed. Expelled will open in theaters nationwide early next year. For more information, visit the movie's website at expelledthemovie.com. And stay tuned to ID the Future as we finish up our conversation about Expelled in our next podcast. I'm Robert Crowther, reporting for IDTF. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Bennett. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.